Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Tonight on the program, the National Climate for Reporting, how reporting and journalism is viewed worldwide, how we get our news and from whom. It's becoming more politicized here in the United States, obviously, and journalism is becoming more dangerous worldwide. Today, we have a panel of local journalists talking about the way we view journalists and how it affects how we get our news here in Mid-Missouri. Our panel includes reporters from KOMU, the Columbia Missourian, and the Columbia Tribune, and is hosted tonight by my co-host, Lee Wilkins, who, of course, was part of the journalism faculty here at Mizzou for quite some time. It's a really interesting discussion. Next, Thinking Out Loud on KBIA.
This is Lee Wilkins, and welcome to Thinking Out Loud. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about how the national climate with journalists and journalism is reflected in our local journalists and how journalism is actually getting done at the local level. The number of journalists targeted for murder in reprisal for their reporting nearly doubled in 2018, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists. Afghanistan, where extremists have stepped up their attacks on journalists, was the deadliest country and accounted for much of the increase. At least 53 journalists were killed around the world between January 1st and December of 2018, and which at least 34 were singled out for murder. What happens internationally ripples locally, and that's the focus of today's discussion with Columbia Tribune reporter Ruli Keller, KOMU News Director Randy Reeves, and Columbia Missourian Managing Editor Ruby Bailey. This panel explores whether and how these international events are being felt in Columbia and Boone County. Ruby, I want to start the discussion with you in part because you're new to Boone County. So, and you have a lot of experience in major metropolitan areas. So talk to us a little bit about what you see the climate for journalism like here and contrast that to what you've experienced in other places.
Columbia is a bit different because it's a small community, but it's very saturated with media coverage. And so folks here are really media savvy, which is a great thing. And extended that even out into Boone County still. We're pretty saturated with lots of media coverage and lots of media organizations. So folks here are overall, I think, pretty aware of the media here locally. And above, I would say most of the folks that I've had to, that I've dealt with or that our student journalists deal with on a daily basis have been kind and supportive.
When I was a faculty member, I always said that everybody got to be a teacher here. It didn't matter whether you were on the faculty or not. If you were a resident of Columbia or Boone County, you were teaching a journalist how to do journalism. Rudy, has that gotten any tougher for working professionals over the last 2-3 years?
I don't really see that it's gotten tougher for journalism professionals, but the areas where journalists might feel a threat has a lot to do with the things that they report on.
Talk a little more about that.
Well, we recently ran a story in our paper about a Columbia police executive officer who had a large number of tweets that were, you know, racially insensitive, misogynistic, you know, many people might call them blatantly racist. And so when we reported on this, we started getting a lot of negative, angry feedback. People who think that anything negative about the police should just be ignored. And the result was, one of the comments that the reporter got was that, "I hope you need a policeman sometime when you're being assaulted."
So, Randy, you're sitting here nodding your head about that story, and I suspect others.
I would say overwhelmingly, I think what my cohorts here have said, it rings true. Overwhelmingly, you find people that are willing to work with you. I do think that we are seeing some pushback in that. You know, maybe it was 3% pushback before. Maybe it's closer to 10% now. People that are a little more likely to push back and say, "No, not you."
So when you say push back and say, "No, not you," does that mean journalist shows up at the door and they say, "No, I'm not going to talk to you"?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Are people getting in one another's faces in a different way?
I think there's not many, and I don't want to misrepresent this, but I think it's more than it was when I started here almost 16 years ago.
Ruby, you're nodding your head as well. So how does the pushback happen?
I think one of the things that Rudy said was so true, depends on what you cover. So if you think about politics, for example, and what a journalist might deal with here locally in terms of being, we had a young reporter who went to a polling place early in the morning and had an altercation with someone who confronted her. The journalist who covered President Trump's visit here had very small minor stories about, oh, you know, there goes the fake news, or where they would hear comments or whatnot. So I do think it was exactly what Rudy said and exactly, what Randy said. It depends, but it's probably more.
So go ahead, Rudy.
Well, I'm just, you know, I covered the Trump rally, and I had looked at video from other Trump rallies where, at these kind of events, the press is mostly concentrated in one area, so they're very identifiable, mm-hmm. and this has been the case for these kind of events forever. But at other Trump rallies in other locations, I had seen video of people turning away from the stage and spending their time taunting and shouting at journalists. That didn't happen here at that scale. There are some people who have an attitude that journalism is not being fair to the president, and that was expressed, but not the open like group hostility that accompanied some the pre-rally events at some other locations. So maybe it's Missourians are a little more polite, maybe at the time that we were there, the tensions between the president and the press maybe were slightly less, to the point where he hadn't been, absolutely out slamming everybody that day. So I'm not really sure why that rally had a little bit different flavor than what I'd seen at other preparing for that rally, but journalists have always had a dangerous job because you are going out to talk to people you'd never met, and you have no idea what kind of reaction is going to occur. The only time I was ever physically assaulted was when I was going out on a Friday night to a neighborhood where police were responding to a report of shots being fired. And it was very close to the Tribune. I walked out rather than drove out, got close to a group of people to try to find out what was going on. It looked like people who were like congregating around, which is a normal journalistic practice. And from the blind side, I caught either a fist or a brick or something. It spun me around. As I got up, I got hit again. And I decided that was time that, I was not very welcome, and I needed to get back to the office. And I think I got 3 or 4 stitches from that. But that's the only time I was ever physically assaulted. So it's part of the business of going into situations where you really aren't sure what is going on sometimes that puts you in danger. Sometimes it's the political side that we've talked about the rallies. So
Randy, in addition to that, when we're print reporters, we don't stick out. None of us actually wear hats or fedoras with the word press prominently displayed
really
on.
Good.
It does look really good at Halloween parties. But broadcast journalists show up with gear. We're pretty identifiable. We're not the normal person. Does that change the dynamic somehow?
It does. And also, all of my folks have cars with big logos on them, which draw attention, let you know that there's somebody in your neighborhood that's there to report on what's going on. And I think that does attract a little more attention. We talk about the light on top of a camera being sort of like draws moths to the flame. And, when you turn on a light over your camera on a street corner anywhere in America, it's going to attract some attention. And sometimes that attention is unwanted. There was a terrible trend of people saying vulgarities when they saw a live reporter on the air. That seems to have died down lately. That's something else to take into consideration. But you're not hiding. You know, when you've got a camera and a tripod and a big light, people are going to know who you are and what you're there for.
And so do we do anything differently? I mean, we're teaching students, and I know sometimes, a lot of the time actually, students are going out, Rudy, as you did, we're basically going out alone. We're going out by ourselves. And in some cases, that doesn't feel very safe.
We've always made a practice, if I'm sending somebody into a situation where it's uncertain, like the one you described with being hit with a brick or a fist or whatever, if I know I'm sending somebody to a situation where there might be violence, I try my best to send at least two people. You know, it's that one extra person, whether that's just another reporter or a production worker, somebody else, just so you're not there by yourself. And I have extended that policy to certain political situations. During the president's visit here, nobody worked alone, and that was the direct result of us having covered a Pence speech. Vice President Pence was in Kansas City about 2 or 3 months earlier, and I sent two reporters, but they had split up to do live shots, one on one side and one on the other, and they were treated very poorly. And one of my reporters, who was a person of color, felt extraordinarily uncomfortable, and I said from then on, I'm not going to have anyone anywhere by themselves in this current situation.
So, Ruby, you were nodding your head a little bit as Randy was talking. Is that something that you're talking about also for newspapers? I mean, I know Rudy doesn't have the option because of staffing, but at the J School, we have a little bit more, you know, depth of personnel. Is that something that you're thinking about changing or maybe have changed already?
We've certainly changed some things, like which is what Randy's talking about having reporters, maybe a reporter and a photographer, especially if it's early morning at a polling place or at night or what have you. So you do try to do that. We've always, and preceding me, so not in the few months I've been here, always told reporters to be safe. I obviously stress a great deal of situational awareness. Know where you are, know who's around you, and understand what's going on and how the situation may be changing and evolving. So those are things that we talk about. Certainly if we have a reporter who we encourage them to let us know, if you feel uncomfortable, if this is something you don't want to do or someplace you don't want to go, don't hesitate to speak up and don't put yourself in a situation where you will not be safe. So whether it's an active shooter somewhere and here you go out to the scene, you don't necessarily have to go knocking on doors in the middle of the night, obviously, to investigate an active shooter that was on the block, because there be people in the house who are a bit on guard at that moment. So don't go knocking on doors. So yes.
Well, I'd like to shift us a little bit from actual physical safety to when we get to the scene and we talk to people, especially public officials. Because one of the things that I think I've noticed over the last several years is a willingness of public officials basically to strong arm the media or to say, no, I'm not going to talk to you, or no, I will not give you a comment. Or in the most well publicized of cases, no, you can't have that piece of paper, especially if that piece of paper is tax returns or something like that. Rudy, you've been covering politics in this community for a long, long time. Is my anecdotal impression anywhere near right?
Well, it all has to do with the personality of the politician, but it also has to do with the politician's perception of how they can best get their message out. Our recent governor, Eric Greitens, is a good example. The first governor I ever covered was John Ashcroft. He probably didn't want to do as many press conferences as he did, but in the mid-1980s, the only way for a governor to communicate with people was through the print and broadcast media. Today, there's all the social media outlets, and Eric Greitens did everything he could to avoid talking to reporters. He would brush right by them. He would even have his highway patrol security create a block, you know, kind of run interference for him to keep journalists from talking to him. Our latest governor is very comfortable with the media. He comes from a small county where he was the sheriff. I don't know if that had anything to do with the fact that he's comfortable with the media. Maybe it's just because he's comfortable with himself. But Governor Parson will sit when you have a news conference. Governor Parson is not making a pronouncement and then a news conference is just a statement and off he goes. He'll sit there and take questions, and engage with you. And you can tell that he's thinking for himself. I've got a joke I kind of use. That politician turned on tape 47B, and you asked the same question four times, and you got tried to get something asked four different ways, and you got the exact same answer in the exact same words. So they clearly had memorized something. So it's really a personality issue with the and it's up to the media to deal with. Okay, if this person doesn't want us to know something, there's probably a reason this person doesn't want us to know something. We found that out with Eric Greitens. So it's up to us to get past that, appreciate it when we do have people who are willing to engage and talk to us openly and what we feel like sincerely and honestly. But at the same time, don't rely on that as the beginning and end of your reporting.
So, Randy, I see lots of head nodding here, too.
I don't want to come down against social media because I think it's opened up in some ways and given us a heads up to cover the larger community, and Facebook groups and all are wonderful, but I think there are an awful lot of people who think that's going to be all they need to do. If they put something on the official city Facebook page, that's fine. But, you know, you don't answer questions to the Facebook page. The Facebook page never asks you difficult questions. There might be something down in the comments section, but you don't have to answer that. You know, when it's a reporter there, and, you know, if I'm rolling video, you need to answer the question. And I think we're missing out on stuff when people sort of find, well, we put that out, it's in a press release, or it's on our Facebook page, good enough, go away.
Ruby, I've seen a lot of this, and I suspect listeners have as well, over the last several weeks, where there's been all this furor about the Columbia Police Department, changes of personnel, all of that sort of thing. How have our student journalists been handling essentially that whole scenario, and especially where people for various reasons have been kind of reluctant to speak to the news media about what's going on or what the latest set of decisions is going to be?
Well, I think our faculty editors do a very good job of encouraging our student reporters, and I would say requiring them to follow up and to be aggressive about, well, you call every person on the city council, and here's their home number, and there's a cell phone number if you need it, and this is where they hang out. Whatever you need to do, find them. And if they decline to comment, ask them why. So if they say, well, no, I really have no comment, why not? Well, it's a personnel matter, so I can't comment. Okay, that's different than I just decline to comment. And then if they say, well, I just declined to comment, to say, well, why do you not feel as though, you know, that your constituents have a right to know about whatever this issue is or where you stand on this petition, on this particular issue? So we try very hard to instill that in them.
Yeah, there's the great tendency among public officials now to respond to a telephone call or a request for an interview with a statement sent by text or email, thinking that that's going to cover it and that's going to be enough. And unfortunately, deadlines and work pressure, you know, sometimes we have to just, okay, they sent out a statement and that's it. But I agree with Ruby that that pushing back is important. The city manager, after he resigned, I was doing what she was describing, calling all the members of the city council, and one of them said, well, I'm not going to talk to you until after we have our closed meeting on Monday. And I said, why? Well, the mayor has asked me not to. And I went, and the mayor is the titular head of the city. And I go, no, the mayor is not the titular head of the city. The mayor is an at-large council member who has no executive authority. And why are you taking instruction as an independent elected official? Why are you taking instruction from the mayor on anything? And that kind of gave that council member a little bit of pause, but they didn't really want to elaborate beyond what we had said in the conversation. But I think that I emphasized to them that, you know, sometimes just you saying something to me on the fact that I'm on the phone with you is not going to be good enough. That I expect you to be an independent person, not a you know, as a council member, you should not be a minion of the mayor. So it is important that we hear what you think, and as early as possible. And so I really want to, I emphasize to the reporters I work with, and I'm glad that you do to the students, because that was the way I was taught in the journalism school, that you just don't give up because one or two people don't call you back. You call everybody on a on a public body until you start getting the story. And I mean, if we had an hour, I could tell you about the Globe Democrat, the St. Louis Globe Democrat, and how my former professor Phil Brooks thinks I killed that newspaper in the 1980s. But you know, and doing exactly that kind of journalism as a student journalist. So, yeah, it's important. It's important that all journalists push as hard as they can, that and that the elected officials they cover know that it's not a hostility, but dedication to your job.
So, Ruby, because you're new to the community, but also because you are the only person of color among us, which is not something that radio listeners can see, do you think the fact that people are people of color, or that people are somehow different, changes this dynamic in any way, either in Columbia or in the other places where you've been a journalist?
I'm sorry, one more time on the question.
Do you think that the fact that you're a person of color changes the dynamic, either with in Columbia or in the other places that you reported, that somehow Rudy has a reputation of a certain kind? What you show up as is how you look is a little bit different, and people spot that or can spot that pretty quickly. Same thing works with students. Do you think? How do you think that changes things, or do you think that changes things?
I think depending upon the circumstance, it may. And I'll give you a very interesting example. When we had a young man who was shot and killed, Amante Harris, and we were sending a reporter, and Amante Harris is African American, and we were sending a reporter to Douglas Park to cover this, to cover a memorial service for this young man, and he was very active in the community. And interestingly enough, this reporter was white, which meant that when this reporter shows up, not that someone white could not come and care about Amante Harris, they could have, but this person would probably be in the minority in that group. So I think it works both ways. I've not found that anyone here has treated me differently based on my race or my gender, for that matter, simply based on whether they read the Tribune or the Missourian. It's really
yeah, okay. Randy, what are you seeing, or are you seeing any of that?
I think there's a general, and I don't want to overgeneralize here, so I'll back up. I think our reporters all have to prove themselves individually, specifically to one person at a time. And there's an expectation that a 20-year-old or 21-year-old, you know, needs to learn a lot. And they do. We all do. But it's very apparent to them when it's a 20-year-old knocking on your door that this is probably the first time they've covered whatever issue that is. Yeah. And there's a, you know, and God bless the people of Mid-Missouri that have helped and helped and helped and helped all of our students get better. But there is that expectation, and sometimes you're treated maybe not the same way Rudy would be or I would be.
Yeah, I think that, you know, covering the General Assembly, one of the things that I was fortunate to do was to maintain my relationship with Phil Brooks. And so I got to interact with the students year after year after year. And this is something that I've found in the reporters that we've had. You know, I do feel like that being a white male going into a situation like the General Assembly, especially when I started in the 1980s, I was much more viewed as someone who might be part of the club. You know, you get, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, misogynistic comment here. And whereas the young women would be coming back and they would be going, hey, that he offered me a drink. He tried to get me out to go on a date. Or, you know, more recently here in Columbia, sending a young woman to a political event, and her overhearing in the back of the, you know, whispered, "Did you know she's Jewish?" in the back of the room, and you know, and even you know, people questioning her patriotism.
Yeah, I think a lot of my memories of being a journalism student were the mistakes one makes while reporting while being young. And just the fact that there is an experiential thing that, that over time makes you a little tougher, makes you a little less sensitive, makes you a little quicker to come back and say, no, you're not going to put me off in this way. I'm here representing others. This is not about me. This is actually about you and your constituents, whoever that happens to be. But I'm glad to hear that despite all of the national stuff, we still have a lot of Midwest nice going in Missouri. That's a good thing, and appreciate it.
Yeah, no doubt.
We had our sports editor murdered on the lot of the Tribune more than a dozen years ago, but that was a robbery and murder that still has been making the news, even in the last year, as the men who had been convicted of that have challenged their convictions, one successfully. But I've never, other than the time I went out and was actually physically assaulted, and we were talking about the identifiable media, broadcast media, in that same period where I was assaulted, a KOMU van was shelled with rocks by a large number of people gathered together. And this was during a high crime period during the crack epidemic of the late 1980s. And I just don't see the kind of, you know, organized hostility to the media that maybe occurring in other locations, you know, alt-right or other groups that want to put fear into our calculation every day.
So Rudy, Ruby, Randy, I don't know how you all got names with ours, but I really appreciate it. I want to thank you so much for participating in this discussion of Thinking Out Loud.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And a terrific job there by Lee Wilkins, and a very interesting conversation tonight on Thinking Out Loud. Thanks to all of our guests for being part of the show. And another part of reporting, journalism, media is sometimes programs have to be edited for time. We have more of that conversation if you'd like to hear it. Just go to our website, kbia.org, click on Programs for Thinking Out Loud. You can hear tonight's conversation in total, and you can hear some of our past programs from the Thinking Out Loud series as well. That's kbia.org. Click on Programs for Thinking Out Loud. We're back next Tuesday with another Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. Till then, for my co-host Lee Wilkins, I'm Darren Hellwedge. Have a great evening.